City are oh so close to the Championship playoffs. Welcome to the latest edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with Coleman's of Norwich. I'm Connor Southall, joined by Sam Seaman and Adam Harvey to reflect on everything that happened on Saturday. We slightly delayed pod this week because, as everyone else was, we were watching Hull against Ipswich last night. We wanted to make sure we were at least speaking from a place where we had clarity around the position, which we now do. A 3-3 draw between those sides means that it's going to take an 8-goal swing, plus obviously a Norwich defeat, Hull victory, West Brom victory, in order for Norwich City not to be playing playoff football at this stage. Now, look, funny things have happened in football. I mean, you referenced Bristol Rovers winning 7-0 on the final day a couple of years ago that got them promoted. And so it can't be totally discounted, Adam, but you've got to say it looks pretty likely. It's one of those all but secure and those type of phrases that we're using this morning to describe Norwich City's playoff hopes.
Yeah, I think when you kind of now look at it, and Hull obviously have to go to Plymouth as well, and Norwich know, you know, from their own personal experience earlier in the season how tough that's going to be, and particularly when Plymouth have got everything on the line. They need to, you know, secure a result to, you know, keep themselves in the Championship ultimately. So I think they've almost got a similar test to what Norwich have got. Norwich got the 3-point cushion and the far significantly better goal difference. It feels very unlikely. I mean, you know, you have to add the caveat if it is still possible, but it feels all but there, like 99% certain Norwich will be in the playoffs. So I think you can book a refundable hotel in Leeds or Southampton now and be fit, or maybe Ipswich, who knows, after last night. But maybe you want to stay in Ipswich, to be fair. But, you know, there's an option there now. I think that you could be pretty confident now that Norwich will be in the semi-finals. And it probably made for a good result last night. And a lot of Norwich fans will be kind of didn't want to support Ipswich, you know, even though it would have secured playoffs, because who wants to back them at any point? And I think a draw probably, it means Ipswich are still under pressure and they still have to churn out a couple of results to try and secure automatics. And, of course, Hull are still that same cushion behind Norwich as they were prior to all the games yesterday. I think it probably adds a slight layer of frustration. Maybe Norwich couldn't get the job done yesterday, secure 3 points, or maybe over the last couple of games, given it was two home games. And I think we all felt one win would have been enough. And ultimately, looking at it now, that extra point would have been enough to secure it. But, you know, I think we can all go to Birmingham almost relaxed.
Almost, yeah, and with as has been the case with Norwich City this season, very much taken the scenic route to their destination, as has been the case with this playoff push. But Sam, as Adam says, they're all but there now, aren't they? I mean, it's going to take something absolutely, and we could look very silly in a week's time, but if it happens, then I think you have to shake Hull's hand and say fair play. But it's going to take something pretty extraordinary now for Norwich City not to be in that top six.
Yeah, I think the main problem I had with the fact that game last night was a draw was just the fact that I had to slightly rewrite the piece that I'd written saying that Norwich had secured playoff qualification, because for me, going to Birmingham next weekend, I'm not going to really be especially stressed about it. As you said, this could end up all over the place if it does end up happening. But yeah, first and foremost, even in the unbelievable scenario where Hull go and beat Plymouth 8-0 or whatever, all Norwich have to do is avoid defeat against a side that is currently 22nd in the Championship. And you look at their recent form and the way that they've played since the back end of last year, you know, I think literally anyone would have taken that, going back to that last home defeat against Blackburn back at the start of November. So, yeah, I think they're in an amazing position. I think, although I know football fans like to be absolutely sure of things before they start to celebrate, or in some cases, definitely. But yeah, for me, trying to look at it from an impartial point of view, I'm not really worried about it at all. And I'm looking forward to covering some playoff football.
Yes, I'm with you on that front. And just to map it out in greater detail, Norwich City, obviously the point against Swansea yesterday, which we will speak about in just a moment, that's taken them up to 73 points. West Brom were beaten pretty comfortably in the end by Sheffield Wednesday. What a job Danny Royal has done there, by the way, and Marty Cifuentes at QPR. And we all saw what they did to Leeds on Friday night. But yes, they got beaten at Hillsborough. That meant Norwich have moved into fifth. Hull then obviously drawing with Ipswich after beating Coventry in midweek. That's taken them up to 70 points. But as we've already mapped out, Norwich have a 7-goal, better goal difference than Hull, plus a better goal or scored record, which essentially means that they'd have to score 8, or they'd have to be an 8-goal swing for that change to take place, plus obviously a West Brom win, which isn't guaranteed at the moment the way they're playing. So it is quite a positive picture. But it is interesting, Adam, sort of speaking about the top six more generally, because, and we were discussing this just a moment ago, there isn't really anyone who is in form over the last five games or so, even Norwich. And I know they've kind of taken points consistently and are towards the top end of any sort of form table that you look at. But they've taken, you know, three draws from four. Leeds have obviously seen the run of form that they're in. Southampton, West Brom have lost three on the spin. Even Ipswich have stuttered somewhat. It kind of feels like a limp to the finish rather than anyone really, really pulling themselves across it at this moment in time.
Yeah, it's been a really strange season. You know, you kind of go back a few weeks back and it felt like it was, you know, we were mapping it out. So in the Fat Cat and Canary, they felt like there was quite a bulk of teams that were all pushing towards the playoffs. They've all kind of slipped off at different points. And then even the sides now that are pretty close to, you know, securing themselves in the playoffs, even they're starting to falter. And you've got the same situation happening at the top. You know, I mean, Southampton sort of started their decline a lot earlier. Leeds have kind of subsequently started a bit of a decline as well. Leicester, of course, kind of, I suppose, were a little bit lucky and they had a few more points than those sides before their sort of decline happened as well. And we've seen the inconsistencies with Ipswich maybe a little bit in recent times because they've only drawn their last three games. So, yeah, it's completely bonkers. And I mean, David Wagner kind of said it, this is the sort of stage in the season where it is most tough to grind out wins. Every result feels massive because everyone around you has got something to play for. And even those sides, like yesterday we saw at Bristol City as well the week before, even those sides in the mid-table, they're sort of building towards next season. They don't want to sort of end the season poorly, and then, you know, that can maybe impact them in terms of certain players looking for contracts or looking for moves, or, you know, trying to attract players maybe next season. You know, say, look, this is a brand of, you know, football we're trying to play, and, you know, look at what we've done at the tail end of the season, come and join us and be part of a ride. So it's certainly that sort of business end of the season, it's tough to get results. And I suppose that's the one upside. Norwich have been, even when they've maybe not been at their best and they haven't been picking up the wins, they've been picking up the points. And I mean, you look back now and certain moments in kind of recent games feel quite big. I mean, Gabriel Zara's goal at Preston has earned them an extra 2 points, and you take that off their tally now and, you know, it could look very different and we'd all be sat here a little bit panicked that we do actually have to go to Birmingham and require a result, and maybe other results have to go in their favour. And even like Bristol City last week, where they weren't at their best, they picked up a point. That extra point now has meant they are 3 points ahead of Hull. You know, if they'd have lost last weekend 2 points, then they would do again have to go to Birmingham and get them results. So I think the consistency of David Wagner's side, you know, you can't undermine how bigger, you know, sort of crucial element that could be now moving into the final day, because I feel like, you know, these extra points they've picked up at different moments have come together and made themselves in a position where, you know, they are the team in the driving seat. And, you know, if it wasn't for certain scenarios to play out and everything has to go against them massively and goal swings, then, you know, they're there. And that's, I suppose, everything we can look forward to now with, you know, what's going to come ahead. And we'll get, you know, talk about the playoffs more generally when we get there at the end of next week.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, the footballing gods would have to be, I think, of a blue and white persuasion, I think, next week for Norwich City not to end up in the top six. But it is interesting. I mean, the form, I'm going to sort of read out the form of the teams really between Leeds and West Brom, I guess, because Hull have picked up points, but even they only have 2 wins from five. Leeds have only won one of their last five, 3 defeats in that point as a reference. Ipswich have won one of their last five, 3 draws on the spin, a defeat before that. I wonder who that came against. Southampton, 3 straight defeats, 2 wins before that. Norwich, obviously, 2 wins and 3 draws from their last five. West Brom, 3 defeats, 1 win, 1 draw. I mean, there's nobody really in there that is in a blistering run of form. I mean, between teams from third to Ipswich to West Brom, it's only Norwich who have won a game of any of their last three, which is incredible. And you compare that with, say, the teams between Millwall and Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, Millwall have won 4 games on the spin. QPR have won 2 on the bounce. Stoke are unbeaten in 3 and only have 1 defeat in 5. Blackburn have been a little bit indifferent, but they've got a couple of draws and a win from 5. Sheffield Wednesday without defeat in 5. So it's remarkable, really, that the amount of teams that are picking up form at this moment in time compared to the teams in the top six. I mean, even Swansea and Bristol City, as we referenced, Bristol City haven't been beaten in their last five. Swansea, obviously, have won defeat in their last five. So it is interesting to watch it all play out, and it probably, you know, buys into this theory that even though, you know, teams maybe have little to play for or are at the wrong end of the table, sometimes they can be more dangerous than teams towards the top end. But leading into the playoffs, Sam, because so much is made, particularly when you go into a playoff campaign, I've already heard a lot of people talk about momentum and form and heading into it with momentum. And It is interesting because I think this is a little bit, I need to double check all of the figures, but I do think this is a little bit of an urban myth. I mean, we've referenced it on this pod before. No team who has finished sixth in the Championship has gone up since Ian Holloway's Blackpool. Even David Wagner's Huddersfield team, who won it in, when would that have been, 16, 17? Forgot my years right. They went into the playoffs having won three games of their final 10 and one of their final five, which was against Wolves. So is there a little bit of a myth that teams in good form or bad form, that can have any bearing on the playoffs at all?
I suppose it has some bearing, but I think it's definitely been hammed up to the extent that people really have almost distorted views of how much it's going to impact Norwich City this season. As you said, the track record for teams that have finished sixth isn't great. The track record for teams that have finished third and fourth, by contrast, is actually still fairly decent. And a lot of people, I think, have this idea that whatever team misses out on the automatic promotion race, obviously one of those, well, it was three out of Leicester, Leeds and Ipswich, now it's going to be Leeds or Ipswich, there was this idea that they would be the most beatable team in the playoff semi-finals, and it just hasn't played out like that over the years. You know, every season there's been a team that's been disappointed not to go up automatically, and it hasn't necessarily correlated with the results that have taken place in the playoffs. So although obviously psychology is a huge part of football, and you can't understate its influence in every single game that takes place, I think applying it to the playoffs and treating it like it's the major factor, I think, is definitely, I don't know if there are certain people hoping because of their yellow and green hats that they that maybe that is the deciding factor, but that definitely isn't what it is based on previous years. Even Norwich, the last time they went up, or the only time they went up through the playoffs, they finished third and were absolutely gutted to miss out on automatic promotion. So, yeah, I think a lot of it still comes down to quality. It isn't all about psychology, and ultimately the best team will win. So I think Norwich will go into it as underdogs regardless, and that's not to play down their chances. You know, I think being the underdog has suited them a lot of times this season, but yeah, I don't think they're going to go into it with any sort of major advantage because other teams are going to be psychologically wounded or because they've been building up momentum recently. That Huddersfield team is a really good example, and in a sense Norwich are almost sort of losing a bit of that momentum with these two home draws. So yeah, it will be interesting to see how things play out in that sort of sense, and I think you can tell when the psychology of games is getting to players. I think in the two East Anglian derbies this season, it's been quite evident from how the games played out that psychology has played a part in that. So I think we'll know more about it when we can watch those games, but just looking at the cold hard facts, it's hard to say that Norwich are in any sense favourites for the playoffs just because they maybe have a little bit more momentum than those teams that have been faltering in and around them.
Yeah, and what I would say is I don't think any team heading into the playoffs will want to play Norwich. The Carrow Road form not beaten there since November. The type of team they are as well, I think they're quite uncomfortable for teams, and they're almost quite chaotic, I think, to try and prepare for, which, you know, sometimes you can get good and bad versions of that chaos, I think, and we've seen those in possibly equal measure this season. But they're going to be really difficult, I think. Plus, obviously, they do have all of that experience and psychological advantage maybe over some of the sides. You look at maybe even Ipswich, Leeds, when they've been put into positions where they are then able to push themselves into better areas and better parts of the table. They haven't quite been able to take that step. At the moment, Adam, it is, as it stands, Norwich City's opposition. If we're talking about the playoffs, and I know you said we'll wait until next week maybe, but hypothetically, if this does get done, it is going to be between three teams because Norwich can't finish, as we know, any higher than fifth. So it's going to be Southampton if they do manage to finish fifth, and it's in their hands if they better what West Brom do next week or match what West Brom do. Essentially, they will finish fifth, and if West Brom better their result, they will finish sixth. And obviously, if Hull get in, then they would finish fifth, wouldn't they, because of the goal difference. So it's going to be Southampton, or it's going to be Ipswich or Leeds. Now, we know that obviously Ipswich play Coventry on Tuesday night, so that could give us a clearer picture, not a definitive one, but a clearer picture of maybe what it will look like as obviously final day next weekend. I kind of put this to David Wagner on Friday, but does it matter who you end up facing, who you end up playing? Do you have any sort of preference? I think I have a preference of who to avoid, but do you have any preference of maybe the side that you'd like to face?
I mean, it sounds kind of silly. I think Norwich will go into it as underdogs, and you know they're going to have to deal with that tag whoever they face out of these, you know, sides. Ultimately, you know, Ipswich have not beaten them all season. Southampton haven't beaten them all season. But I think, you know, when you get to the playoffs, and it's a high intensity game, and it's Norwich actually have navigated those kind of games quite well at different points this season. I felt, you know, and maybe that plays into their favour. They've got a manager and lots of players that have maybe gone through the similar situations, and they've had to come out the other side of that, and that experience and that nous of knowing what it takes could, you know, potentially be an advantage. But in terms of who to face, I don't know. I mean, part of me wanted Southampton, but then having seen Swansea and Bristol City in recent times against Norwich, sides that like the ball, Norwich have actually struggled a little bit to sort of create the levels of chances. I know they created a lot of chances yesterday, and maybe the clinical edge wasn't there, but they haven't actually had as much joy against teams that like the ball. So I'm maybe less inclined to want to go for Southampton, and maybe the psychological element of Leeds or Ipswich, I know we kind of mentioned, maybe it doesn't have a massive bearing, but if to go that close, be over the 90-point barrier and potentially lose out on the final day and that crushing feeling of, you know, not getting automatic promotion. I just wondered, given that they've only got a week to try and turn themselves back round and get in a mindset where we need to go and attack the playoffs and get through two legs against a side that's, you know, in relatively decent form, and particularly over like the second half of the season, you know, since 2024, Norwich are definitely one of the form sides in the division, and maybe their position doesn't look, because of the dip they had sort of pre-Christmas, maybe doesn't look like where it should be. So, yeah, I think maybe I'm slightly swinging more towards Leeds. I think Ipswich, I maybe want to avoid more for the reason of what is potentially could be lost. I think, you know, if Norwich got them and, you know, we lose at Portman Road, we lose the, and that they knock Norwich out of the playoffs, and we lose the 15-year run all on the same day, I think. And, you know, seeing their fans on the pitch celebrating like we had at Carrow Road, oh, I don't think I want to see that. So I think maybe avoid them. See, actually, I'm thinking maybe Leeds. I mean, I watched their game the other night against QPR, and there's a way to beat them, I think.
Are we getting lulled into a false sense of security, though? Because we have, seen, like, the Elm Road game, we saw how comfortable they were against Norwich. Carrow Road as well, they showed the quality. They've got the Championship Player of the Year. They've got a £30 million player. Is there an element, maybe, of Norwich and other teams as well being lulled into a bit of a false sense of security by Leeds at the moment?
Yeah, I think, I just feel like maybe in recent weeks we've kind of seen the sort of weaknesses in this Leeds side. And if you're David Wagner and you're looking at that, you know, Norwich have already been beaten by a narrow margin both times against Leeds this season, and I think it's maybe been that individual quality of Somerville, you know, at Carrow Road, and the strike he put in the top corner, and even the game at Elland Road. I mean, Norwich had a few opportunities, nothing really clear cut, but they kept themselves in the game. And I just think, you know, you look at maybe Leeds actually more generally as a team in high pressure situations, you know, go back to maybe, I know it's a different manager and, you know, everything that comes around that, but the season that Norwich went and won the title, and you know they were so far clear, League One as well, so far clear, and they dropped out playoffs against Derby. I don't think they'd beaten Derby. They'd beat Derby both times in the regular season. Come to the playoff games and Derby knocked them out, and you know that would have been a crushing feeling. So I think maybe their fans and their players, maybe if Norwich do a result at Carrow Road against them, that's, you know, element of kind of the edginess that might be in the crowd. And you know, I've seen a few Leeds fans, rightly or wrongly, feeling a little bit frustrated at Daniel Farker at the moment. And I just think maybe if, you know, Norwich could go there and frustrate them, maybe they'll get some joy. But yeah, I think whoever they get, you know, it's going to be difficult, and it's going to be a challenge for a multitude of different reasons. And, you know, ultimately, whoever Norwich get, they're going to have to go there with the right mindset, perform to the highest level, of, you know, as David says, top levels are all, you know, across the board. And let's see what we get.
You mentioned Ipswich there. I have mentioned this to you, I think, but there is a scenario in my head which I don't want to play out by any stretch of the imagination, but I think would be quite humorous more than anything else, which is Norwich win the... Say they, you know, they've got Ipswich in the playoffs. They win the first leg 2-0. They then go to Portman Road and lose 1-0. So that run would then be over, but by the same token, Ipswich wouldn't actually be able to celebrate it because Norwich would have won on aggregate. It's not a position I want to play out, but that would be quite funny, I think. Although, you know, not putting me up in Portman Road with 60 minutes on the clock and Ipswich being 1-0 up and needing more goals would not be a fun experience, I don't think. So, yeah, keen to avoid that. And obviously, we'll probably have a clearer picture in terms of who that third place team will be, or maybe we won't, dependent on how Ipswich do against Coventry in midweek. Sam, I mean, same question for you, really, as we sit here. And again, it's all hypothetical because it's not secured yet, and we'll keep emphasising that and adding that caveat. But who are you looking at as wanting, if any of them, if you had to choose?
You know, if you'd asked me before Adam's answer, I would have said Southampton. But he's actually turned me a little bit with that point about how Norwich have fared against teams that like possession. I mean, even especially Swansea. You know, Williams is a manager that actually worked under Russell Martin, and clearly is, if you look at the way that his side plays football, a sort of disciple of that style of football. And I think that is quite a good point. You know, there was a time in the season where Norwich actually thrived on teams that wanted to come and press them and wanted to play a more attacking role, because that left the space in behind that they loved to exploit. But for whatever reason, they became a team that actually got a bit better at breaking teams down. You look at that 5-0 win over Rotherham, and I think there were several other examples during that 8-game winning run at Carrow Road, where they showed that actually they don't mind breaking teams down, and they have struggled against teams that like a bit of possession. That said, whoever they come up against, it feels like will probably have more possession. I mean, you know, you talk about a Russell Martin side. I think Norwich fans have seen for themselves how much a Daniel Farker side likes possession. So, you know, you combine that with the potential to face a Kieran McKenna team in Ipswich, who maybe have enjoyed a little bit less possession and a little bit less dominance in the second half of the season, but certainly in the first half of the season were absolutely focused on keeping it and controlling the game with possession and keeping it on the floor, even if they progressed it quickly. So I think Southampton will be the most idealistic team in that sense that Norwich could face in the playoffs, and marginally that's the reason why maybe I'm starting to wonder whether that would be the best matchup for them. But yeah, that I think they'll struggle in that department, whoever they come up against. So maybe I would stick with Southampton, but all along I've actually thought that Ipswich, although we'd all be very nervous and I think it would be an incredibly tense atmosphere in both games, I think if it just comes down to football and it just comes down to, on paper, all the factors that go into it and whether Norwich would be most likely to win, I actually feel they've got the best chance if they play Ipswich. And going back to the last playoff campaign, which obviously they won, obviously they beat Ipswich in the semi-final. I remember those players that were involved in that, and Alex Neil, the manager at the time, talking about how important it was just to get all of the psychology of the game out of their heads, get the derby factor out of their heads and get it down to a football match. And they knew that they could beat Ipswich in that sense. And I almost feel that it's the same this year. And although it's not the same roles, because last time Norwich were almost the Ipswich and Ipswich were the ones that had just about sneaked into the playoffs in sixth. But because Norwich have been unbeaten against them this season, they've looked the better side, and Ipswich have clearly struggled against Norwich. I think if they could get that out of their heads, which they should have the squad to be able to do, I think they'd have a pretty good chance against Ipswich. The reason why I'm not considering that so much is that I think, unfortunately, they will get automatically promoted, looking at the fixtures they've got left and the table as it stands. So for me, it's probably a choice between Leeds and Southampton. And although that possession factor does come into it, I think they're similar sides in that sense, and Leeds just have a little bit more quality. So yeah, it feels important to me that Norwich finish fifth to get the best possible chance of going through to the playoff final. But I think when you were asking Adam, you outlined really that for a lot of people it basically doesn't matter. And it is true that whoever they face in the semi-finals and the final, if they get there, it will be a very difficult game. So yeah, probably just wait and see what comes. But if you ask me right now, very, very marginally, I'd go for Southampton, I think.
This sounds a bit backwards, so bear with me. But in many ways, I would feel more comfortable about Norwich in a final against any of the teams that we've discussed, really. Mm. But also West Brom as well, I think, or Hull, than I do over two legs. Just because I think you think about this Norwich team, and I think yesterday kind of epitomised that, really. moment, and that wins games in one-off basis. You look at the quality that Gabriel Sara can produce, but I just think over two legs, and you know, you go back to the last playoff campaign that Norwich were in, it was quality really that told over the two legs. Norwich won that game because they had better players and they were a better team in the end, even though the first leg was a draw. So that kind of feels to me more. If they can get through a semi-final, I think I'd be pretty confident that they could get through a final. Yeah. I think in many ways I'm more, not worried, that's the wrong word, but I'm more nervy probably about a semi over two legs against those sides than I am a final. So, yeah, we'll see how it transpires. And obviously they've got to get there first and we'll keep it, because bizarre things can happen. For what it's worth, I think Southampton is probably the better bet. I think the way that Norwich set up, but I agree with you. I think there's maybe been some alarming signs with you know, I said to you before kickoff, I thought it would almost be kind of a dress rehearsal almost for if they were going to play Southampton. Even though I don't think Swansea were as ideological as maybe Southampton were, and as ball heavy as Southampton are. But in terms of the way that they play, I think the last 2 weeks have maybe been good preparation for that. So in many ways, could be a good thing that they've had that experience. They've still scored 5 goals against Southampton this season. OK, they've conceded 5 as well. But I think they're two teams that there'd be goals in that tie, I think, because they're two teams that give up pretty good chances to probably their opponents too regularly. So then it would be about whether you could finish and be clinical. And I think with Josh Sargent, with Gabriel Sara, I think Norwich would be able to do that. So I'm probably just slightly edged with Southampton, but I think you made the case for Leeds. I think you can make a case for them as well. And you know, by the same token, there's going to be a narrative one way or the other, because it's going to be either a former playoff winning captain who played over 300 games, it's going to be the head coach that won 2 league titles here, or it's going to be Ipswich Town and everything that comes with that. So it's not going to be a dull few weeks, that's for sure. And as again, we'll repeat it, they've got to get there first. Let's talk a little bit about the Swansea game then, Adam, and we'll probably split this across two parts. But what you know, we've had a little bit of time, obviously seen the result, that's added a little bit more context. How do you feel about that result sat here today, and is that different to maybe how you felt at Carrow Road last night?
Yeah, I mean Sam made a good point actually before the game yesterday, and then after the result particularly, you know, given kind of what happened at Stoke in 2019 and Norwich drew there, and we all left I remember leaving that ground pretty deflated that day, and it felt like they'd blown it. And then we were all on the coach coming back, and we're all, you know, watching the Brentford Leeds game unfold and what happened there. Sergio Canos, of course, what a player.
Doing his proper streets won't forget players.
Yeah. I remember after the game, I think he referenced it, you know, Norwich fans would be celebrating it. But yeah, I think that's almost slightly how I felt last night. I mean, maybe not quite the same elation, given that, you know, Hull drew, so they've just matched the result and it's still not quite mathematically there. But then obviously Ipswich don't mention, so maybe I was kind of glad it was a draw. But I think, yeah, maybe I'm reflecting on it now as maybe not so much of a, more of a missed opportunity in the sense they could have secured it, but also not a huge blow because it hasn't really changed anything. If anything, it's just another game out of the way with, and, you know, we can say with probably another maybe 10% more confidence that Norwich will be in the top 6 come the final whistle at St Andrews on Saturday. So, yeah, I think looking at it now, mixed emotions on it really, and I thought Swansea were a good side, and probably in the end, I know Norwich maybe unexpected goals and probably the chances they had and the levels of shots, you know, retrospect to Swansea, probably on another day should have won far more comfortably than they did. But you know, that's credit to Luke Williams and Swansea. They've done a professional job on Norwich, and they look like a well-coached side that I think if they can get some, you know, investment somewhere, that's a bit of an issue with Swansea more generally and kind of recruit in the right areas, I think they'll be a, you know, side that will be certainly advancing and progressing next season further up the Championship table, similarly to Bristol City. And that probably shows the dangers of playing sides that maybe haven't got anything to play for more generally in the Championship and everything that comes with that. But it's another game out of the way with, and all eyes now on Saturday. And, you know, I know we're going to dissect the game a bit more, but I don't think any Norwich fan could reflect on that result as negatively as maybe they did leaving the ground yesterday, where, you know, I think we all kind of felt a little bit disappointed, even despite the fact Norwich had moved up to 5th, so they'd actually gained a place, and, you know, it almost put West Brom at more of a disadvantage, because they would have been the side that Hull probably would have, well, certainly now are looking more at West Brom as the side that they can pip to try and get in the top 6. So, yeah, Norwich still in the box seat. So in the end, yeah, not the worst result.
Sam, would you concur? Because there was a real flatness inside Carrow Road, I felt, as you know, lots of people did leave before they did the lap of appreciation. Plenty stayed as well. there was, I felt a real sense of, maybe disappointment's a bit strong, but maybe there was a slight regret, as Adam says, that they weren't able to do it. And we'll dissect the game a little bit more detail in part two in a moment. But in terms of your feeling, you obviously spoke to some fans afterwards, we got some fan messages in. What did you feel was kind of your feelings, but also the general feelings at full time?
Yeah, I think it was quite a strange position because people were almost suspending their emotions, yeah, waiting for that game. And although that can feel like disappointment, I felt more that it was maybe a more sort of intellectual, thought-through disappointment than an emotional gut reaction. I think everyone just knew unless they won, then it basically didn't mean anything without the context of what obviously went on to happen between Hull and Ipswich. So I think it was quite difficult for fans to decide on their emotions at that point. Probably there were as many nerves on the full-time whistle as there were on the first whistle of the game. And I think fans didn't really know what to think. It's almost like now that Hull Ipswich result has happened and it's almost like the game didn't happen. It's not like people are now going back to the game and reevaluating their opinions. They had their opinions and now they almost feel that it's completely irrelevant, and that's a bit what it feels like to me, you know, from a footballing perspective and analysing tactically what it looked like and maybe the form that some of the players are in. It is definitely an important marker because we're now only a week away from the end of the season, a couple of weeks away from the start of the playoffs. So in terms of dissecting the minutiae, it's something where it's probably a worthwhile exercise. But in terms of the emotions that are felt from it, it's almost as if it didn't exist really. So I haven't seen many people talk too much about that Swansea result, and that probably suits David Wagner and his players quite well, because although they remained unbeaten, and as Adam said, really, as with Bristol City last week, I thought Swansea were a good side. I thought they played fairly well, and I don't think it's a horrendous result, but equally it's not the sort of one that you want lingering in the brain for an especially long time. So I think people have probably already moved on from it, but there are maybe some slight concerns for me sort of going forward, in that I think if you'd asked me 3 games ago, even with Jonathan Rowe out injured, I could have easily told you Norwich's best 11 and the 11 that Wagner would probably be picking for the first leg of the playoffs. Now they're in a situation where Rowe's back, but he doesn't look quite up to the 100% that he was showing earlier on in the season. Ashley Barnes might be out, and we don't know how long for just yet. You know, you got your new list coming back into the mix, and McCallum maybe hasn't been quite as impressive as he has been earlier in the season. And although Norwich obviously will go into the playoffs in good form, I think that Swansea game, just purely from an isolated Norwich perspective, rather than looking broader at the Championship table and the playoff picture, has raised more questions than answers. And I think Wagner will probably hope that a lot of those answers are provided at Birmingham next week. But for me, there are some very small concerns that have arisen in the last couple of weeks. And I think if they can win convincingly against Birmingham and they can shut those concerns out, then I'll be able to park them forever and go into the playoffs feeling as positive as I would have done a few weeks ago. But right now, it just feels like everything is a little bit in flux, and a few things are still to be decided, even though Norwich are in such a picture of clarity in terms of the Championship table.
There we go. We'll speak more about the game in just a moment. When you bring the heat, we'll speak about the player of the season and all of that good stuff as well. See you in a sec. You're listening to the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast, speaking on the Sunday after the Saturday, which was a 2-2 draw for Norwich City against Swansea at Carrow Road, and a 3-3 draw between Hull and Ipswich Town means that their playoff place is all but secured, barring some miracle-esque events on the final day of the campaign, which you can't discount, but I think we're hopeful certainly won't play out. We were talking just before the break about the Swansea game. I think you're right, Sam, in terms of it just feels like a game now that kind of, and maybe this is a good thing, I think, particularly for Wagner and his squad, that almost you can park and move on because the context of it means that, you know, point in the circumstances isn't the worst result in the world. I mean, we were talking about the top six picture earlier, and actually you think that they've gained 2 points from two home games, 2 points from six. I think if we were in isolation to look at those two and maybe place them anywhere else in the season, you'd say that's probably an under par return for what we would expect, particularly given they took six from Preston and Ipswich. But that's probably allowed them to just tick along over the last few weeks. And what has been important is the fact that they've probably kept putting one foot in front of the other. It's not been a stutter and then trying to pick yourself up again and lose one and draw one and win one. They've been able to consistently kind of chip away. And I think that's been really important in terms of what they're trying to do. And actually, you look at the points cushion they have now, and you referenced maybe the Preston result. Well, my mind goes back to think about the three draws, Sheffield Wednesday. There was lots of noise around that draw. QPR, think about all the noise that was around that draw. Blackburn, similarly, that could be the 3 points that has given them the difference and given them this cushion. And those five goals against Rotherham now look unbelievably important for the goal difference and obviously the state of play at the moment. So, I think it's interesting how it's all panned out. Just to go back to this game, though, Adam, and you said about the sense of missed opportunity. Is that because of the position that Norwich worked themselves into? Because they were ahead in this game. They had obviously fallen behind from Patterson. And, you know, I've watched it back, and I think Gunn will be disappointed with his positioning. But, you know, we spoke about this a little bit yesterday. Given all of the points that he's probably saved Norwich City over the season, I think we can forgive him, obviously, involved in the penalty as well. But just second to a foot race, it happens, I think. Then the way Norwich came back, and we'll obviously speak about Gabriel Sarr and his individual brilliance in a moment, but to then get yourself in a position where you're leading at the break, you've got 45 minutes to almost manage the game, to then not do that always, I guess, probably feels slightly disappointing.
Yeah, I think also probably the levels of chances they had at different points throughout the game. And I felt first off actually sort of, they were pretty good up to the final third, and it was just kind of, they got into sort of the areas where, you know, you felt just get the ball right here, or, you know, sort of maybe even signs, you know, either side of the defender, he probably scores, isn't blocked off the line. And sort of those small margins maybe went against them yesterday. Duffy too cleared off the line, you know. Just kind of those things that on another day will fall in the right place and you'll get the result you require. And I felt actually at half-time Norwich would kick on again. You know, that sort of late Sargent header in the first half, I thought that was pretty big probably for the mindset going in at half-time. You know, you're leading the game and you've, you know, turned the result completely on its head from 1-0 behind. And that's obviously been a key strength of Norwich's kind of second half of the season. More generally, they often fell behind in home games, but there's something, you know, the crowd still back them. And within this side, we sort of spoke about the psychological element. I think just they never sort of believe that's it, where, you know, years gone by, teams gone by, that would almost be sort of the killer moment. It's almost game over at 1-0. So to the credit, they turned it round. And yeah, I thought second half, there was maybe a slight edginess in the crowd you could feel. And obviously then Swansea get the penalty, and there was probably a willingness, I think, from the crowd for them to get it forward and to try and, you know, obviously get the goal they required to win the game. And I think on another day where you maybe needed the you know, for 3 points to try and get yourself in a certain position, it would have looked like a really negative result. Now it's kind of just, yeah, another one where it's going to be quickly forgotten about. Similarly, Bristol City, you know, games like that where it has just been a point, but they will obviously all stack up and in the end of the season be a crucial kind of part of what they're going to do and get themselves in the top six. So, yeah, I think missed opportunity is kind of how I felt at the time, but maybe now it's just another one out of the way with, you know, and we can all move on. And I think, you know, certainly going into the playoff games, they're going to have to be a little bit more clinical than they were yesterday because, you know, there was quite a few good opportunities and maybe a little bit of panic. I mean, I sort of go back and it was almost individual brilliance really with both the goals. It was Gabriel Zara that created both. I thought he had an unbelievable game yesterday. You know, the goal was something quite special. The assist for Sargent to be able to pick him out and the header obviously that he sort of planted the other, you know, to go back across the keeper was a, you know, top quality striker's header that we've come accustomed to with him more generally. And yeah, on another day, I think they win that game, and there'll be a little bit of disappointment. But I don't think David Wagner and his coaching staff will be, you know, debriefing it with too much detail. They'll just be looking firmly on Saturday, and probably what's more, you know, lies ahead for them in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and I guess if you want to operate in those terms, it's a point essentially is what they need. But you know, as we've mapped out, realistically, they probably won't even need that next weekend. And given what Birmingham had to play for, I was slightly worried that they'd be in a position where they'd have to go there and get a result of some description. And whilst that is technically the case because of the goal difference swing and everything that we've explained, is maybe a little bit less pressure on that than perhaps there would have been. Yeah, and you said that they had chances, they had moments cleared off the line. Duffy had two headers. I think they had 27 shots in total, or something ridiculous, which is the most they've had for a while. So there were opportunities there, but I think in many ways it was kind of summed up probably by Jack Stacey, if you were to put the performance into one person. That's not to single him out for any reason, but just in terms of kind of what you said there, got himself in really good positions all afternoon. I looked at the statistics last night, 11 crosses, not one of them was successful. And that kind of sums up a little bit. And there were moments in the first half, I thought they were just overplaying in and around the box. They kind of worked the ball nicely into shooting opportunities, and they looked for, you know, to turn a good chance into a great chance, and then it got cleared. And that was quite frustrating. But I think it, because of the context of it, is probably easy to kind of shake off to an extent. Gabriel Sara, Sam, he is quickly becoming, for me, I think Buendia and Houlihan, obviously towards the top of the list, but one of my favourite Norwich players to watch, I think, just because of what he... I mean, he's so good, he could play for England. That's how good he is, even though he's Brazilian. The goal is superb, and I think people maybe underestimate the difficulty of the technique there in order to hit that and get the pace and power and dip and accuracy, all of those elements onto the ball. I mean, he's almost hit it as if it's a free kick. That's kind of the technique that he's used. And then Adam mentioned, if you know, your right back's not delivering crosses and your wide players aren't delivering crosses, well, I'll do it myself, lads. I'll peel off to the right and put a ball on Josh Sargent's head. And as you're a striker and you make that movement to the back post, think about how incredibly difficult it is for a player to put the ball in the exact position. I mean, Sargent's not had to change his run. He's not had to move, you know, change his or really kind of move his neck and stretch to get into that position. It's almost perfect. All he's had to do is just then guide the ball into the back of the net. He's not had to put power on it, pace on it, or anything like that. So for me, both of those individual skills are just signs of a player who is increasingly above championship level.
Yeah, it's interesting you made that that comparison with the Buendias and Houlihan's. Probably the two players I've enjoyed watching the most for Norwich in the whole time I've been watching them. And I have to say, I didn't really have Sara right up in that bracket before, because, I mean, anyone that loves football would have loved watching Buendia and Houlihan and their unique styles and the way that they treated the ball. And sometimes, I think a lot because of the role that Sara was playing previously, he seemed like a bit more of a mechanical footballer who, yes, was incredibly talented, but maybe didn't have that same unique flair. But just watching him in the last few weeks, there was actually a moment, I think, after that assist for the Sargent goal where I thought, actually, he is now up in that bracket with the likes of Houlihan and Buendia in terms of just being a joy to watch that Norwich fans should almost treat like a circus that's moving out of town before long, because unless they're promoted, he won't be a Norwich player for much longer, and they won't be paying their hard-earned money to watch him at Carrow Road too often. So I think, yeah, after that first half display, especially yesterday, I was just left thinking, yeah, you have to savour these moments now, because it's not often that any fans of any championship club get to watch a player this good, and just the casual ability to just put the ball in one perfect spot, as you said, with Sargent for that goal. You know, if Sargent had been able to point exactly where he wanted the ball for that header, he would have put it exactly where Sara found him. And I also feel that in recent weeks he's cut out the mistakes. It feels like he's been through various phases actually this season. I thought right at the start he was putting it all together, then he went through that really, really tough period where he wasn't really contributing the goals or assists, and his general performances weren't really up to the standard that he's shown previously. Then I felt after that, when Norwich started to improve, he was contributing a lot of individual moments. But I think in the last few weeks, especially in part of this sort of home run, he's combined both those incredible moments that have won games and earned points for Norwich with a consistency and reliability on the ball. He's cut out any mistakes, and yeah, he's almost been putting in perfect performances as Norwich have been chasing this playoff spot and now looking to secure it. So yeah, it is quite funny because obviously Kenny McLean was unveiled as the player of the season yesterday. Everyone knows what a big fan of him I am, and a lot of the discussion was about that. Post-match, I spoke to Sarah, and a lot of the questions from me and others were about player of the season and missing out on that. But I think if the vote had happened after yesterday's game, or maybe even after a couple of the other games where he's been vital recently, he might have just snuck in ahead of McLean, to be honest. And although I think McLean maybe just about does deserve it, or at least deserves an equal spot, I think now they're almost exactly alongside each other in terms of who's been the most important player for Norwich consistently throughout this season. So yeah, the message to Norwich fans has to be just enjoy him while he's here. Hopefully Norwich can get promoted and then keep him for another season in the Premier League. But yeah, you don't get too many Gabriel Saras in yellow and green unless maybe it's Brazil. So yeah, just enjoy him while he's here.
Yeah, indeed. When he plays like he did yesterday and produces moments like he did yesterday, he's just unplayable at this level. I really don't understand, as an opposition manager or as an opposition more generally, how on earth you even go about halting him or stopping him when he's in those positions and he's turned you and he's running towards your goal, because he can hit a ball with such accuracy pretty consistently that he's either going to score, but then he's got the quality that he can roll someone in, or he can find a ridiculous pass that will tee up somebody else. So he's so difficult, I think, to play against, and that's a testament to the quality that he has. I think NCSC Numbers put out last night a list of players who had in one season had recorded over 12 goals and 12 assists. It's a pretty elite club, I think, this century. Obviously, I think it's Darren Huckabee. Grant Holt did it in League One and also in the Championship. Temu Pukki did it in the first title winning campaign. Emi Buendia as well. So that gives you an idea of how an exclusive, I don't think Pukki did do it. I think it was just Buendia and then Sarah. So a pretty exclusive club that he's in. I mean, this is a remarkable season, Adam, by a player who, you know, considering he's only his second in English football, it's incredible what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, 25 goal contributions in the Championship plus a goal in the FA Cup. I mean, you know, for me, he is up there for as well. You know, I know you two sort of mentioned where he is, sort of ranks maybe in sort of players you've seen. I think he's definitely now got to be in my top three as well. I'm sort of toying with James Maddison, Buendia, Houlihan, sort of those calibre
players.
Better
numbers than Maddison in that season, yeah.
I mean, Pukki, you know, is an absolute legend, but I think just pure technical quality. I mean, Gabriel Zara. We all saw it last season, really, when he first came in. Sort of, it was there, and maybe Dean Smith wasn't getting the best out of him. And to be fair to David Wagner, I think that's where he deserves massive credit, because you look at Gabriel Zara and what he's done to him as a player. He feels like he's now kicked on a lot more. I mean, second half of last season, he won player of the season off the back of what was a really good second half of the campaign, some really brilliant moments, you know, the goal at Millwall, and there's a good strike against Cardiff, I remember, and sort of various moments like that. But maybe there was a lack of consistency more generally. But I mean, this particularly the second half of the season here, you know, sort of since that maybe barren run where it was, you know, I think not that he came for criticism, but I think we were all a little bit like, okay, he's having a bit of a, you know, poor patch of form here and maybe not performing to the levels that we know that he can. I think that's maybe where the frustration was, more than, you know, he was actually performing poorly. It was just, we know what he's capable of. And now we're seeing it again. And I think you look at the consistency of his contribution in terms of output of goals and assists now, it's up there in the Championship, you know, top levels. I think if it wasn't for that poor run of form, I think he would have been a shoo-in for sort of the more Championship player of the season competition more generally. I know he got himself in the full team, and I mean, he got my vote for Norwich player of the season. I've been pretty much in the camp that I think he, you know, if you're going on pure individual and what they've contributed to this team, without him and you take him out of this team, this Norwich team is definitely not where they are at the moment in terms of the top six, because it's not just the goals and assists. I mean, yesterday he spun past two defenders quite early on, quite in such brilliant fashion. There was a flick to signs as well in the second half, sort of down near the snake bit. There's not many players that can do that generally, but certainly, you know, sort of, in a Championship kind of calibre of player, I don't think you're finding many, you know, maybe apart from the Somervilles of the world or the Dewsbury Halls that are just that far advanced that they should be in the Premier League. And I mean, Sam mapped out, if Norwich aren't there, then he's going to be banned for the Premier League with someone next season. And I actually look forward to watching him wherever that is with Norwich or you know, another side in the top flight to see how he gets on, because I think, you know, you see it a little bit with Brazilian midfielders. They tend to do quite well in the Premier League. I mean, Bruno Guimaraes at Newcastle, and different sort of type of player, but they tend to kind of enjoy themselves playing in kind of that technical sort of league, and I think Saraf sort of suits that. So, yeah, the journey's been on, and everything. I think we, you know, we've all got to look at the end of the season and just say what a joy he was to watch. If he's still here, hopefully Norwich are in the Premier League, then yeah, we'll all be relishing the idea of watching him next season, because he's a very special player. And I think, you know, if he kicks on in the Premier League, you know, the value Norwich will get is going to be even more than they'd get in the Championship this summer, because I feel like he's going to be sort of pushing Emmy in terms of the figures that Norwich will demand.
You know, it's funny Adam mentioned that turn on two players, because when you were saying about you don't know what an opposition manager would do to deal with Sarah, I thought, oh, could you put two or three players on him the whole game? And then I thought, actually, no, that wouldn't work either, because he turned two players yesterday. So yeah,
you just have to kick him. I'm gonna be honest. I really don't see what
that
else
might be your style.
It's not really mine. But like, I don't really see how else you can halt him. But even then, you've got to get close to him. And even with his movement and position, I'm not sure you could necessarily do that. So that's going to be really difficult. He's some player. And what would be interesting to me, I know this maybe is jumping the gun a little bit, but I know some Premier League teams have watched him before and maybe just felt that he's a little bit lacking against the ball and just slightly short of a yard of pace or two to be kind of a central midfielder. But now we've kind of had a sample, and I know he played as a wide player for a little while in Brazil for about a season, I think, at São Paulo. But we've seen him as a 10 and in that sort of role, and the level of productivity that you can get out of him. I think increasingly that's where I would see a Premier League team maybe looking and at him, feeling that he could add value in that kind of 10 attacking midfielder role or alongside somebody who's pretty combative, one or two. So yeah, we'll not wish him away, but yeah, I think you're right. It does feel like if Norwich City aren't in the Premier League, he will be come what may. So we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, just an unbelievable talent. Very quickly, Sam, I did want to speak about, because there's been a lot of conversation about this, the substitution that David Wagner made. There was obviously the two subs that he made around 63 minutes, which I actually felt made Norwich a little bit disjointed, but that's probably a debate for another day. Yes. Kind of felt almost like substitutions for the sake of substitutions to an extent. I think that came a little bit at the cost of their fluidity and rhythm, and some of those attacking opportunities that they created in actually the last sort of 20 minutes or so felt very penultimate day of the season, final home game of the season sort of vibe around it. But more specifically, the one when Barnes has pulled up, and to be clear, he had an Achilles issue that he was struggling with pre-game. That's why he was dropped to the bench, and they've been managing that a little bit over recent weeks. But it was actually a separate issue, a calf issue that he picked up. And I have seen a few statistic websites that haven't got him recorded as having a single touch in that 15-minute cameo, which is quite something. But he then comes off, and you know, I think most people were probably then expecting to see Sidney van Hooijdonk emerge as the player, you know, comes out of the dugout and at the front of the technical area, ready to step onto the pitch. Instead, it was Jakob Sørensen. You know, I asked David Wagner about that post game, and it was a round the houses sort of answer, I felt, but it was kind of centered around how he wanted to keep Marcelino Nunez on the pitch, which, you know, we could debate. Van Hooijdonk then comes on with about 20-30 seconds to go. What did you make of that whole situation and that decision, I guess, not to bring him onto that pitch? I guess it probably reinforces everything that maybe we've been talking about with him in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think an important bit of context to probably add around that Nunez thing, because I think some people maybe missed it in their confusion about that answer, was that Nunez actually moved up to the number 10 position so that Sørensen could be in that deeper midfield position. And yeah, I think Wagner mentioned that he felt that Nunez could probably press a little bit better, and given he'd played 75, 80 minutes, whatever it was by then.
Does Barnes do that though?
Well, he spoke, I asked him about Barnes a couple of weeks ago, and he said that he does a lot of the work, or he has been doing a lot of the pressing work for Sargent when he's been sort of struggling with the ankle injury and hasn't been able to get through as much work. So obviously, you know, whatever we think, Wagner believes that, that Barnes fulfills the pressing function that he requires from his strikers. But yeah, I think it tells you probably a lot about how he sees Van Hooijdonk, that he'd rather keep a midfielder, a deeper midfielder who's played the whole of the game up to that point in an advanced number 10 position because of his pressing ability, than a fresh Sydney Van Hooijdonk, who he's had a few months to work on the fitness of. So, yeah, I've seen a lot of different theories. There seems to be almost a disbelief about the way that, that he's been treated and the game time that he's had. But I think, yeah, unfortunately, it just comes down to the fact that Wagner probably doesn't see him being...
just doesn't feel like it fits, does
no, it? No, I don't think he sees him as part of his tactical setup. He doesn't think he has the strengths that he requires from his strikers. And obviously, it's not a signing that he went into in detail and was the driving force behind. I think it's quite clear from how Ben Naffa spoke about that and from the difference in ideologies between the two that probably was a Ben Naffa signing, and the divide on that is clearly there. So yeah, I think it's not really any sort of secret theory that's any sort of behind the scenes issue. I think Wagner just doesn't like Van Hooijdonk as a player, and that's a shame because he's someone who's got a very good goal scoring record, and Norwich have a permanent option on that you assume won't be taken up given how things have unfolded since January. But yeah, the more perplexing bit for me was the fact that he brought him on for, I think there was actually about 15 seconds left of, obviously there ended up being, I think, another minute.
It was
minute,
a free kick, know. Wasn't there? He brought him on basically for the
free
kick.
Yeah, and I actually felt, for what that gives you, it was basically just a waste of time that Norwich needed to try and get that extra goal. That, for me, I actually felt quite sorry for Van Hooijdonk in that position, because as a footballer, you know, maybe, I mean, we haven't seen him in training every day. Maybe he isn't good enough. He clearly isn't somebody with the attributes of Wagner.
We can only take the words that Wagner has used, and I asked him about him a couple of weeks ago, and he said that he was doing well in training, and that's all that he could do. Of course, you know, how much of that is just public management is there for debate, but that's we have to take him at face value when he says that.
Yeah, of course. And yeah, so then I suppose you have to assume that it's tactical things, which you can understand, but I just feel sorry for him as a person, because we can see them as footballers, but he's somebody who's probably packed up all his stuff, moved from one foreign country to another one for him. He probably doesn't know many people around here at all. He's had to probably move into rented accommodation and all of that in a different country for as many minutes as he probably would have had in Serie A with Bologna. I just feel sorry for him on a personal level, and it is a bit of a shame, because he's, you know, from a footballing perspective and from a Norwich City perspective, because it doesn't look like Norwich will ever really properly get a look at a player who could go on and achieve things in the game. But I also just feel for him on a personal level, because he's probably gone through so much effort in his personal life to make this happen, and it hasn't really done anything for him career-wise. So it's one of those moves that hasn't really worked out. I don't think there are any secretive dark arts behind it, but he clearly just isn't somebody who fits in with what David Wagner wants.
Yeah, indeed. And actually, just to round off on that point, there have been a few times where I thought, oh, if only Norwich had Adam Eder to bring into certain situations. So I
saw someone mention this on X, I think, last night. Even Ken Abow, I mean, if you're talking about a second striker, he wants to come on and add an energy and add a pressing element. I know, obviously, there's been an injury issue with him more recently. It probably begs the question why he's not been involved, certainly on the bench, if it is an opportunity for coming on. Yeah. You know, given obviously Norwich, they know there's a talent there that can score goals. Wagner's outlining that's what he wants from someone who's a second striker, just to go on and press, I feel like Kennebo's energy and what he can provide, who knows where, you know, certainly for his career, he could actually go on and kick on and do good things, and Norwich could potentially miss out on that. And I think that maybe leads the door open to maybe why he's not had the level of opportunities that you know, I think many would have expected he would have got.
Yeah, I mean, I was told he was fit yesterday, so I don't think there was a fitness issue there for yesterday, but there was last week. There was a slight hip tightness, I think, was what he said. Right, we've got about a minute and a half to get through Bring the Heat, so we're going to do that very, very quickly. Adam, who brought the heat for you this week?
And we'll go Gabriel Zara, but I'm going to go away from that because we've done a massive segment on him. I'm going to go Marcelo Nunez again. I think a couple of times in the first half,
there was one tackle right down in front of us where I can't remember who lost the ball, but he came in, and to win the ball in the fashion he did, I think the sort of defensive work he's now doing, that seems to have gone to a new level in recent weeks. And I know we've always sort of felt Norwich haven't had a defensive midfield type, and it's probably an area they're going to have to address more generally in the summer. But I think for someone who's, I felt last season we could see the quality in him, but maybe the physicality and sort of it wasn't there, but he feels like he's a little bit more bulked up now, and the defensive work has gone to a new level, and what he does for this side and what they look like without him is, as we saw last week actually when he got subbed off against Bristol City, they look a lot worse without him. And I think he's actually got to be one of the first names on the team sheet at the moment, and that's a credit to him and David Wagner for what he's sort of done, I suppose, particularly in the second half of the season.
I'm going to go with Onel Hernandez, who's in the Barclay wearing a Norwich scarf, proper ultra style. Sam, you've got about 15 seconds. Who brought the heat for you?
Ben Gibson. It feels like when you concede two goals, the defenders shouldn't get praised, but he was he was massive at the back, won a lot of headers. It was when it was his sort of game, and he could contribute in those ways. I thought it was very good to say. Credit to Ben Gibson.
Excellent. Thank you very much for watching and listening, and we'll see you next week. That will be the end of the Championship season. Hopefully we can head into the playoffs. See you then.